This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. Our legal conversation today will be top tips for getting help on children's disputes with your ex. I'm joined by Barrister Freya Rowe from Thomas More Chambers in London. Freya is an outstanding senior family law barrister who is passionate in her efforts with earned credit from the High Court and the County Courts. Freya has extensive experience in complex domestic violence and children's cases. She is described as highly sensitive and diplomatic to her clients and ensures that they understand what is happening at all stages. She is able to communicate effectively and build up a strong rapport with clients from all backgrounds and abilities. Freya, thank you so much for joining me again today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Hattie. It's lovely to be here.
Government statistics show that there are around 3.6 million children in separated families. 56% of separated families have child maintenance arrangements in place, with around 90% of single parents being women. The impact on children from conflicts between parents can be enormous. And having been in a relationship where I myself was a single parent, even though a child may seem resilient, we should never underestimate the effects on a child when disputes between parents arise. In this episode, Freya and I are going to be giving you some top tips to consider when trying to smooth out disputes over your child or children with your ex. Priceless information that you cannot afford to miss out on. Freya, let's start by briefly explaining, in the eyes of the law, what parental responsibility means and when a parent is legally defined as being a parent. I think that's important and you will hear why.
Yes. Well, clearly we all know what a parent is in the sense that if you're a biological parent, it means that you're the mother or father of the child. But in terms of the law, then there is an element of proving that you are a parent. And what you have, if you're named on the birth certificate of the child, is something called parental responsibility. And you have that automatically if you're named on the birth certificate. It gives you the legal right to be consulted and to have a say in some of the important decisions for a child. So, for example, what nursery or school the child should go to, whether the child should be going abroad or moving away out of the jurisdiction, things like important medical care that is sought for the child as well. You have a right and a say in all of those basic decisions that are to be made for a child.
Yes.
And you have to be a parent or affiliated in some way with the child to be able to make any application to the court about that child. Occasionally you find that there are step-parents, for example, who aren't actually biologically related. They're not on the birth certificate. They may need to obtain a parental responsibility either by an application to the court or by way of agreement. And they may need to get permission from the court to be able to make an application. So it does give you basic rights if you're named on the birth certificate. Occasionally, of course, some parents are not named on the birth certificate. Sometimes people have split up, for example, before the baby's born, and the mother doesn't always register the father's name on the birth certificate. That can all be dealt with through the courts if need be, or by agreement.
Yes.
But it's quite an important basic starting point.
Yes, no, I get it. And do you know what? We could actually probably do a whole podcast on parental responsibility, yeah. I think. One of the things that I read on the .gov.uk website was that a father has parental responsibility if he's married to the mother when the child is conceived or if he marries her at a point afterwards. But I always thought it's connected to the birth certificate. I always thought if you're not on there, then that's it. So, yeah, then I thought, right, good stuff. No, and I think we should do a podcast on parental responsibility, actually, because I think that there's a lot of myths that surround that topic and a lot of unknowns. And you just briefly touched on that when you were talking about step-parents. And I think that would make a really interesting podcast. So there you go. I'll make a note of that one. But can you tell us some of the most common arguments between ex-partners that you have had to deal with through the courts? I mean, I could think of a few myself, but what are yours?
Well, certainly when people first separate, there's often a huge amount of anxiety about the children and whether the parent is going to see the child again. And a lot of parents see this as a competition for the child. Sometimes it's also a competition for the house. And to some extent, the two are connected, potentially. And so very, very common arguments are really, firstly, about who the child should reside with, who they should live with.
For on a full-time parents, basis.
Yes. Yeah. Should it be one parent or both parents? Should it be shared care? How should the time be apportioned? Very often one parent wants the child to live with them most of the time and be the primary carer, and the other parent doesn't accept that that's the situation, that there should be shared care. And very often, of course, you have to look at the sort of history, you know, what's happened so far. Because sometimes in some relationships, there is quite a clear situation when the people separate, that one parent is the primary carer, the other one is the kind of working provider. But it doesn't necessarily have to stay like that throughout a child's life. And people can adapt their working life to fit around the child as much as possible. So I think the most common issue is that the sort of pattern child arrangements, who the child should live with and how the time should be divided.
Yes. One of the best things I was going to say, Sarah, one of the best things that I've read on this topic was that your relationship may be over, but your family is not.
Well, that's right. And I think it's been quite difficult, isn't it, to accept that your partner might not have been a very good partner to you, but they might actually be a very good mother or a very good father.
Yes.
And so it's sort of separating yourself and your view of that person from looking at it really from the children's perspective, looking at it from their eyes. The other big problem that is often causing arguments is extended family. Very often you find that extended family get involved. They all wade in with their various views. They let their views be known at various functions and birthdays and things like that. And there's quite often a real worry about one or other of the parents saying negative things about the other family.
And I have to say, I've seen that a lot, Freya, where people say, he's or the other side, so it could be the man or the woman, is telling the child a whole pack of nonsense or allowing their emotional feelings to be passed on to the child about the other parent. And I know, I'm not saying it's easy to not do that. I'm not saying it's easy to kind of detach yourself emotionally and then to tell your parent, to tell your child, sorry, that they should have an unbiased view of their other parent. But God, we've got to try really hard not to do that. We've got to try hard to not pass on your feelings about your child's mother or father onto your child.
Well, that's right. It's very important. It's very unhelpful from a child's perspective, because ultimately children want to, they love both of their parents. They want their parents to get on. They very often want their parents to stay together or to get back together.
Yes.
And unrealistic as that may be, you want to make it as easy for the children to feel that they're able to express that they love both of their parents in front of both parents. The other issue that often causes a lot of arguments is affairs. Very often you find somebody's had an affair, or even after separation, they've managed to move on with their life and they're happy with their life, and the other parent is sort of feels left behind.
Or not very quite approving of the new partner of the other parent. I mean, acting in your kid's best interest, you know, has to be the most important priority. And I think if during difficult times of trying to agree arrangements for your children with your ex-partner, if you keep that in mind, what's in the best interest of my child without me feeling, you know, the anger, the hurt or the resentment or whatever it is towards the other party? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's very simple things become very big issues, and you've touched on it before earlier today, right, saying about holidays, you know, even which school holidays the child should spend with which parent, how much time, even to where, you know, we've had phone calls in my law firm of where, oh, he wants to take the children to this country, and I'm sure there's a, you know, a motive for that other than a holiday. I don't even believe they're going. We've heard it, or as I'm sure you have, but co-parenting is a term that I've only heard in recent years, I have to say. And when we talk about separated ex-partners raising children together, it's known as co-parenting, referred to as that. What are the first steps a parent could take if they feel that they really are not able to resolve their issues with their ex-partner? What would you say would be good steps to take, Freya?
I think, firstly, I would sit down and actually, perhaps if it's difficult to talk to each other, put things down in an email. Say, for example, set out what the child's routines are, what clubs they go to, what their school hours are, what if they have any clubs at weekends. Work out what your working hours are or your ex-partner's working hours are. Take the assumption that from the court's point of view, a court would want the child to see both parents as long as it's safe to do so, and say, what can you fit around those routines and those working situations and the geography of where you're both now living? Because they often want the person to have to move away somewhere cheaper. And what's actually realistic? What are the logistics of it? Because sometimes that in itself can help you to come to some sort of agreement, even if it's just an interim one. The other thing that you can do is consider whether you need to have a third party involved to talk to you. Very often that would be a professional mediator. They can be very, very helpful. You can also look at some of the parenting apps. There are some surprisingly good parenting apps out there.
There's one called See It Differently. It's a collaboration between Good Things Foundation and One Plus One. Yeah. They've co-produced digital content to help parents organise and work through different scenarios. And I think and as crazy as it sounds, because I'm one of these rather old-fashioned people in a way, and I think, oh, no, I'm the one that goes, oh, no, they've got an app for that now as well. But if it saves you having to have that conversation, which can really become heated quite quickly, and there's an app sort of designed where you both put your details in or however it works, I haven't used it, which diffuses the situation and gives you options based on, as you mentioned earlier, the working hours, the geography of where everybody lives, the, you know, what your children need to do or child needs to do, where they need to be for school, clubs and everything else, then it could be a good start. You know?
Yes, absolutely. I think they're really helpful. They're often recommended by CAFCAS officers.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Parenting, my Parenting Wizard app is very, very popular with CAFCAS. It is something you have to pay for, but it's
what
not
was that one called? Sorry, Freya?
My Parenting Wizard app.
Oh, okay. My Parenting Wizard app.
Yeah. And it has different memberships. So, for example, you can, it's sort of almost like bronze, silver, and gold, if you like, depending on what you pay for. But it's not actually as expensive, you know, prohibitively expensive. I think it's between something like £70 and £150 a year.
Okay.
So that it's well worth it. If it does help.
Put it this way. If really that helps, then it will cost a damn sight less than going down the legal route in any shape or form. Yeah. So it's probably worth a try. My question is, can you use it if you haven't split up with your partner to make sure they pull their weight in the house? You never know. I might be able to. I might be able to resolve some of those issues for 150 quid, Brea. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about your top three tips to those parents who do not want to go down the legal route, but are desperately trying to resolve their issues. And we've just mentioned that apps are available. And I know, as crazy as it may sound, I think it's worth having a little feel around there. I mean, benefits to your children, it goes without saying, of you resolving these arrangements with your ex-partners. Children start to feel secure and safe because they're confident that they're loved by both parents. A child will always benefit from consistency and routine. Any parent who just dusts themselves down and gets away from the emotional war that they might be in with their ex-partner can see that. And I mean, a child will learn to have better understanding of problem solving, having seen their parents effectively and hopefully as peacefully as possible navigate and solve problems. And that goes, you know, even before we touch on the mental and emotional kind of healthier attitude that a child can have if they're not exposed to conflicts between their parents. What are your thoughts on that, Sarah? Freya, I nearly called you Sarah. God almighty.
We both have red hair, Hattie, I think.
Yes, just to say, Sarah is Sarah Cooper, a barrister who's also from Thomas More Chambers. I can't even speak now. Gosh.
I call faces as well.
Yeah, I'm going to call Sarah Freya on my next podcast with her. I promise you that. Right, where were we?
Well, I think always, like you said, you know, remember really to do your best to really try to keep your child in the forefront of your mind as your top priority. You know, understanding that they love both of you as parents, and that they should be seeing both of you as much as possible. And, you know, they will want their parents to get on. They shouldn't be exposed to any of the adult issues. So, for example, you know, if there are arguments about money, arguments about affairs, about how somebody has behaved badly, that sort of thing. They don't need to be exposed to all of that. And that they, the parents, you know, need to really think about what sort of care arrangements are going to work for the child. And in some cases, shared care isn't very helpful for children. In other cases, it's actually necessary. It depends on so many factors. What a lot of research has shown is that a lot of parents want shared care in the sense of sort of 50-50 equality. And that keeps the parents happy. But a lot of research shows that, in fact, quite young children don't actually like being moved from household to household like their little packages.
Yeah.
There are lots of stresses that come with that. Think about your different parenting styles. Very often you find one parent is rather indulgent, allows the children to eat too many biscuits and sits around on their iPads a bit too long, watches TV. The other parent might be rather strict. And rather than sort of looking at the other parent and being critical, try and think about ways that you might be able to complement each other. Because sometimes the fact that you have very different parenting can actually be quite a good thing.
Good cop, bad cop. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Well, also, when you look at it in the round, you know, holistically, the child's had, a bit too much telly one weekend, perhaps no telly at all the next weekend. And actually, it can work out being, you know, quite good for the child. But maybe, you know, agree to talk about things in a very amicable, sensible, calm sort of way if there are things that annoy you about the other parent. Sometimes it helps to, you know, talk about things and explain why you're not happy about something.
A one size is never going to fit all, is it? So you have to, and it is a changing, it's a changing platform according to the age of your children as well.
Well, as the children get older, they, you know, they want different things, and it comes to the point where, you know, once they get to secondary school, very often, you know, their parents are become less and less important to them. In fact, really.
Oh, I know that place.
You know, we're all used as taxi drivers, aren't we?
Yes. The bank of mum and dad.
Mum and dad, that's right. Yeah. And so, you know, sort of take into account really that, you know, the children may or may not want to spend every sort of second of every hour with you. The fact is, you know, you may want that. You may feel, for lots of reasons, particularly once you split up, that you feel maybe a bit of guilt that you're not there for the children all the time. But the fact is, they may not want you hovering over them permanently as a little helicopter mum and dad. They might actually, you know, just want to see you, but actually spend an awful lot of time doing their hobbies and being with their friends. And I think also, you know, accept the fact that things have changed, because I think sometimes people, you know, really find it very difficult to move beyond, you know, the fact that they were once together in the house and they saw the children all the time. You have to accept, I think, as a parent, that once you split up, it's not going to be the same again. You're not going to be living in the same house. Things are going to be different. But you just want to make that as comfortable for the child as possible so that they see that they've got two homes now.
Yes.
You know, maybe one home might be the nice big family home, the other home might be a little flat or whatever. But actually, as far as the child's concerned, you know, they've got their loving parent there. And try and make, you know, your home as nice as possible in the circumstances that you've got for the child.
Yes, yes.
You know, no. you know, try to, you know, get on and communicate with the other parent as, you know, as well as you can. If you really can't, if every time you speak to the other parent, you end up having some horrible critical argument, then, you know, perhaps don't communicate for a little while, but communicate by email or a parenting app or something like that, where you've got a bit of time to think about what you're saying. And,
I think that's very helpful, because when you go, even if you think, okay, I'm not quite ready for a parenting app, or I can't get the other parent to want to use it, because with an app, I appreciate that two people have to want to engage in it for it to work. Yeah. But emails are, I think, an effective way of just, if you keep things short, polite, and to the point, it doesn't mean you have to love the person that you're sending it to, or be in agreement with the way they're living their life or the way they're behaving. But if you just be polite, and it's difficult, but try to leave that door open so that they can respond with a positive response. Because your other option is, if you really, really can't resolve matters, if you don't go and get legal help to try and get some contact arrangements and arrangements for the child in place, then your child's going to suffer, and your child's not going to have that interaction, like you said at the very beginning, that, you know, the court wants to see the both parents involved actively, as long as it's safe for the child to do so.
Well, that's right.
In the child's life.
Make a bit of, you know, make a bit of an effort, you know, find ways to perhaps reassure the other parent. Because, for example, you know, it can be very difficult. If you're dealing with, for example, very young children and the child's going away for the first time to go and stay at dad's flat round the
corner. It's nerve-wracking. It's nerve-wracking.
Quite nerve-wracking for the mother. And so, you know, for the dad, what the dad could do is maybe send, you know, a nice little photo of the child all cosied up with a little, you know.
Just to show their progress through the day, to say, look, this is what we're doing. Yeah, and as that trust grows, and as the child grows older, then you don't need to keep the mother informed as much. Because I do see sort of men on one side saying, well, why do I have to give her a report of what I'm doing? But it's not about giving a report. It's about just saying, look, we're okay. And it's also about mum saying, look, I'm going to let go a little bit. And just trust that it's okay if they have a lollipop, that sort of ice cream at 2 o'clock and not lunch at 2 o'clock or whatever it is. It is a massive compromise. And I think that's what both parents should be thinking about, Freya.
And also, you know, little things can go a long way, little gestures. So, for example, if it's Mother's Day and the child's with you, you know, make the child do a little card for mum. If it's Father's Day, make the child do a little card for dad. You know, show that you're supporting
the other parent. It's a fine line, isn't it? There is a fine line between saying, I'm teaching my child to support you as a parent, even though we're not together, but it doesn't mean I'm reaching out to you in a relationship kind of form, because people think, you know, it quickly turns into that, what is she on about? But we've got time to discuss one more area, and I'm sorry if I'm streaming through these questions, but I wanted to discuss this area because we do get it asked a lot. So one of the questions that we're asked very often is, can separated parents get legal aid to pay for their legal assistance when arguments over the arrangements for the children become too much to deal with, when it's safe for the children to see the parents? So when there's no abuse or substance abuse or physical abuse involved. My understanding is, no, not really. But let me hear your comments on that, Freya.
It's very, very difficult nowadays to get legal aid. Obviously, legal aid would look at the means and the merits of the case. So they look at your assets, they look at your income, they look at how good your case is before you can get legal aid. And so if you are a parent on a very low income, or, for example, on benefits, then it's certainly worth you investigating whether you can get legal aid. Not all family solicitors do legal aid work. And so you will need to find some firm who does legal aid work in the first place, and then ask them, and they can apply. You know, they can try to see if they can get legal aid for you.
They will go through your circumstances, and they'll ask you a various list of questions to see whether you qualify. But if it's just you and your partner having spat after spat, and therefore you're saying, look, I need a court to give me an order to actually agree the arrangements we have for our children, just off of the back of that, off the base of that, if there is no abuse or substance abuse involved, it's going to be very difficult to get legal aid, and you may not qualify for it.
You may not, that's right. And if you don't, then perhaps think about whether you might get some legal advice just in the early stages so that you have some basic legal advice. Listen to some of your podcasts. You've got some excellent podcasts, Hattie.
Thank you.
So that you get an idea about what the law is in Section 1 of the Children Act and what does the court actually looks at. And if necessary, you can make your own application for a child arrangements order. You don't have to be represented to make a Section 8 application. And there's a lot of information on the website. If you Google it, you will find...
Child's application, yes. The C100 form, I think it's where it all begins. But you're right, you can represent yourself. You can take your matter to court. But I think you said something really important there, Freya. Try to take a little bit of advice at least up front, because what you don't want to do is waste... any money particularly, but any of your time and efforts into going down a road which actually you may shouldn't really be going down. But you do direct access, don't you, Freya?
I do. A lot of barristers now do direct access. It can be cheaper. It can work out as being cheaper to go direct access to a barrister.
Yes. So let me just tell our listeners about that. So what we're talking about is going directly to a barrister for assistance, but not all cases are fit for direct access. It means you don't pay for the time of a solicitor. There isn't that kind of middleman working there. I think direct access, when it works, is brilliant. And in this case, what you do, if you wanted to get hold of Freya for her to help you out with your children's issues or to take advice, is you'd call her chambers, Thomas More Chambers, and you speak to her clerk. You explain your situation. You'd say, I want to speak to Freya Rowe. I'd like to have an appointment with Freya Rowe. And they would talk you through the process and the costs. And then things go from there. But you mentioned getting other realms of support. I know that Relate, which is, and this is external free support, they're a charity providing relationship and family support, as well as support for co-parenting. Also, Action for Children. Action for Children offers parent talk, which provides parenting advice to parents, co-parents, and families.
And the CAFCAS website is quite helpful. I mean, it can be quite difficult to navigate. There's an awful lot of information on there. But it's not a bad place to start and to start reading up, because they do have some very important things to say about co-parenting and ways to try and co-parent well. So that can be quite helpful too.
Yes. Freya, that's all we've got time for. Thank you ever so much for joining me. You are a wealth of knowledge, and it's always a fantastic pleasure to record with you.
And with you, Hattie, thank you so much.
Thank you. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcasts. And you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website, getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.